This story is inspired by a true incident that happened in a McDonald's. More about the incident after the story. Richard and I have been friends forever. We both came from pretty messed up families, and we weren't very popular in school, but we always had each other to rely on. After graduation, I went to community college and got an okay job with a food distributor. Richard started working at McDonald's. We're both in our late 20s now, and Richard still works there. In a way, Richard was jealous of me for making a better life for myself. I often had to loan him money as well. He didn't have to pay me back, and that was okay. He was still a good friend. On the other hand, I was jealous of Richard because he was a lot better looking than me. He went on dates all the time, while I always struggled. I'm a little awkward around women, but Richard helped me out with that. He gave me confidence. He was always my wingman whenever we went out. And most importantly, he set me up with a couple of his female friends. Last month, he introduced me to this great girl. Her name was Rachel, and she was really out of my league. Without Richard, I never would have had a chance with her. After two dates, I knew that Rachel was one I was meant to be with. She was perfect. Then one night, we planned dinner together. Me, Rachel, and Richard. We were supposed to meet at this little fancy Italian restaurant. I was paying, of course. Unfortunately, my boss made me stay late that day, so I got there about half an hour late. Rachel and Richard were already inside. I could see them through the window. They were smiling and laughing. I immediately felt jealous. He was trying to take her from me, and it was working. I watched through the window as he pulled out a single rose and handed it to her. She accepted it and kissed him on the cheek. "You're kidding me." Furious, I got back in my car and drove off. I texted Rachel a bit later, apologizing for missing the dinner. She texted me back and said everything was fine. The two of them were having fun without me. I felt like I'd been stabbed in the back. I thought about calling Richard, but I didn't have the nerve. The next day, I was even angrier than before. All I could think about was that stupid rose. How could my best friend betray me like that? He knew how much I liked Rachel, and he just couldn't let me have her. After fuming for hours, I got in my car and drove straight to McDonald's. I knew Richard would be there, but I didn't know what to do when I arrived. I entered through the back door into the kitchen. Richard was alone, assembling burgers and cooking fries. Hey man, what are you doing here? Seeing his smiling, handsome face made me even angrier. He acted like he didn't do anything wrong. "You gave her a rose," I screamed. "What? You want Rachel for yourself. Well, you can't have her." He was too shocked to say anything. He stepped closer. Next to him, the oil in the fryer was bubbling loudly. "I thought we were friends. After everything I had done for you." "Dude, I'm at work. Let's go outside and talk." He reached towards me, acting like I was a crazy person. That's when I punched Richard in the face. I'm not a violent person, and I'd never gotten into any fights before, but my anger and his betrayal had taken over me. He tried to punch me back, but I dodged his fist. "Just listen, man," he screamed. I don't exactly remember what happened next. I was too angry to think clearly, but I guess I grabbed him by the back of the neck and shoved his face directly into the fryer. Droplets of hot oil splattered everywhere. Richard grabbed onto the edge of the fryer before his face got submerged. His nose was in the hot oil, though, and the droplets were flying into his skin. He bellowed in pain. With all my strength, I tried to shove his face all the way in, and he wouldn't let me. He was a lot stronger. Still, I wouldn't stop. He twisted his face side to side, looking up at me, his left cheek making contact with the boiling oil. He was losing his strength.
I told her the rose was from you.
I immediately let go. He pulled free. His cheek and nose were bright red, almost purple. Strips of skin were falling off his face. He stumbled three steps towards me before collapsing on the floor. He was still alive, still conscious, but I guess it was too much pain. By then, two of his co-workers came out from the front of the restaurant. They had seen what I had done. One of them screamed while the other one ran to Richard to see if he was okay. My anger quickly subsided. I finally realized what I had done. I attacked my best friend for no reason. I misinterpreted everything, and now his face was permanently scarred. I lowered myself to the floor too, whimpering, barely able to breathe. I don't know how long I sat there before the police came and took me away. Now I'm being charged with attempted murder. My lawyer is advising me to take a plea deal, which I probably will. But there's one part of me that thinks I should take whatever punishment that they give me. I should be locked up forever for what I'd done. Rachel won't talk to me. Richard's still recovering in the hospital. All I know is I really, really messed up. I'll suffer the consequences for the rest of my life. And I know Richard will, too. In a real incident, a man's wife, let's call him Mr. A, worked at the McDonald's as a manager in training. She called her husband to complain that employees were being disrespectful to her. Mr. A came to the restaurant and physically attacked a cook, punching him in the face, grabbing his neck, and trying to push his head into the deep fryer. Fortunately, other workers stepped in before the cook was seriously hurt. The cook ended up with a swollen forehead, a black eye, and scratches on his neck. Mr. A was arrested and later pleaded guilty to the misdemeanor assault charge. He was sentenced to serve a few weeks in jail.
This story is inspired from a true incident which happened in the year 2024 in Missouri. More about the incident after the story. I was restocking shelves when John staggered in my direction, a mischievous smirk plastered across his face.
"Hey, sir," he slurred. "Need some help with that box?"
His tone dripped with sarcasm, and I forced myself not to reply with any aggression. Kevin leaned against a mop in a corner. From the corner of my eye, I spotted our manager stepping out for a break, leaving me alone with them. "You guys need to get back to work," I said quietly, hoping that even a small show of authority would deter them. It didn't. Instead, they moved closer, pressing against the shelves, surrounding me in a semicircle. That night, had it not been for a sudden influx of late-night customers, I wasn't sure how far they would have gone. Fear churned in my gut, and I realized they weren't just joking around anymore. Their intimidation escalated each passing day, culminating one night when they stumbled into the store reeking of booze. They cornered me near the freezer, whispering threats. Panicking, I reported them to the store manager first thing in the morning, feeling both guilty and relieved. "They threatened me," I told him, my voice trembling. "I can't keep working like this. They're dangerous." The manager, alarmed by my distress, launched a quick investigation. Within days, John and Kevin were suspended. Though I felt safe again, I also felt the sting of guilt. They lost their jobs, and part of me feared they would blame me for their misfortune. A few weeks later, I handed in my resignation, choosing to wipe the slate clean. I moved across town and found work as a waitress in a local restaurant. It was a new beginning. For months, I remained blissfully unaware of what had become of them. The restaurant was owned by a man named Mr. Patel, who was notoriously strict about losses. If a customer left without paying, it was automatically considered the server's fault. My new coworkers warned me, "Don't ever let anyone leave without settling the bill. Mr. Patel will make you cover it from your own pocket." I nodded, taking the warning to heart. Every day, I served guests with a friendly smile, never letting my guard down, especially on busy nights. Then, one fateful afternoon, I looked up from the menu I was holding and felt my stomach lurch. There they were, John and Kevin, crowded into a booth near the window, their eyes locked on me. I tried to stay composed, acting as though they were any other customers. When I approached their table, Kevin sneered at me. "Well, well," he said, smacking his lips. "If it isn't Sarah, didn't think we'd see you again." I forced a polite smile and took their orders. "What can I get you?" I asked, my voice steadier than I felt. John leaned forward, a smug grin tugging at his mouth. "We'll have the steak special and a couple of beers. Don't keep us waiting." I wanted to scream, but I swallowed my fear and went through the motions. For the next hour, they feasted and drank, making snide comments under their breath. My nerves buzzed with apprehension. Something felt off, like they were toying with me. As soon as I handed them the bill, they exchanged knowing looks. I sensed it coming, but I was still too slow to stop them. They bolted for the door, toppling their chairs. My heart pounded in my chest as I chased after them, dreading Mr. Patel's wrath if they escaped without paying. I cornered them in a narrow alley just a block away. I tried to seize John's arm, but he wrenched free, laughing. "You shouldn't have reported us," he spat. "We lost our jobs because of you." Kevin and John surrounded me, grabbing my wrist until pain shot up my arm. Before I could scream, they shoved me into a dumpster. My ankle twisted as I collided with the rusty metal, trash spilling out as I struggled to keep my balance. I heard their footsteps echo on the pavement as they fled, their laughter fading into the distance. Bruised and trembling, I stumbled out of the dumpster. Adrenaline still pumped through my veins, mingled with a sudden wave of relief that they hadn't done something worse. My mind raced with possibilities. I had to face Mr. Patel, but I also knew the police needed to be involved this time. By the time I returned to the restaurant, Mr. Patel stood by the door, fuming.
"I'll cover the bill, but we need to call the police. I know these men. They assaulted me."
He hesitated for a moment, looked at my disheveled appearance, and then agreed. The police arrived within minutes, and I gave them a full statement. Days later, they tracked down John and Kevin, charging them with assault and theft. In July of 2024, a shocking dine-and-dash incident occurred at the Fish & Co. restaurant in Camdenton, Missouri. Patrons allegedly left a $150 bill unpaid, and when waitress Liana Bertels pursued them down a dock, they grabbed her wrist and pushed her into the Lake of the Ozarks before escaping on a boat. Security footage captured the group leaving, but not the assault itself. Bertels, hurt and humiliated, pulled herself out of the water after 10 minutes. The group had earlier grown angry over food delays.
This story is inspired from a true incident where a woman broke away from the shackles of her abusive husband after 18 years of marriage. More on the case after the story.
Warren and I have been married for 25 years. We had our problems, mostly because Warren got angry over stupid things, but I think we were happy. We didn't have the same spark we used to, but I don't think any couple does after being together for so long. For Valentine's Day this year, Warren decided to have a romantic dinner at home instead of going out to some restaurant. I was fine with this, but then he suggested that we invite our friends Laura and Daniel over for a double date. Laura and Daniel were our best friends, but I thought it was strange that he'd want to share our Valentine's with them. I didn't argue, though. He'd already invited them anyway. That was my first clue that something very strange was going to happen. Warren paid a catering company to send over a grand feast. It was much more food than four people could possibly eat. He cleaned up our dining room and added candles for ambiance. When Laura and Daniel arrived, Warren got really excited. He invited them in and we all sat together for some pre-dinner drinks. Everyone was laughing and joking, except me, I guess. I kept staring out the window. I wanted to have a good time, but I resented the fact that I had to share my Valentine's with our friends. This wasn't romantic at all. Laura was the first to notice. She leaned over and whispered into my ear, "Is everything all right with you two?" "Of course, I'm fine." Her husband noticed that we were whispering, but he didn't say anything. When it was time for dinner, Laura asked if I'd join her in the bathroom to freshen up. I thought that was a bit strange, but I followed her in. She locked the door behind us.
"Okay, you have to be honest with me. Is Warren hurting you?" "What?" "You're acting weird around him. I see you glaring, and don't think I haven't noticed the bruises on your arms."
I looked down at my arms. I didn't have any bruises. Outside the door, I could hear footsteps. I couldn't tell if one of our husbands was listening in on the conversation. It seemed like it. "He's not abusive, Laura."
"Please stop lying. The proof is all over your face."
Someone was definitely standing outside. I tried to get Laura to lower her voice, but she wouldn't. She kept telling me that I needed to stop my husband from hurting me. I told her over and over that he wasn't,
but she ignored me.
You need to leave him tonight!
This conversation was going nowhere. Laura had never acted this nosy before. She'd also never been so stubborn. Maybe she was the one who was in an abusive relationship and was projecting it onto me. I pushed past her and opened the door. Daniel was standing in the hallway. I could tell that he'd been eavesdropping. He looked at me with both concern and sadness. It's not true, I told him. Like his wife, he didn't believe me. He marched back into the dining room, where Warren sat alone at the table. He jumped up in surprise when Daniel charged at him.
I knew you were a dirtbag! How could you?
Daniel grabbed Warren by the shirt and pulled him to his feet. My husband was much larger and stronger than Daniel, but he'd been taken by surprise. He got pummeled by Daniel, falling backwards and toppling our table to the side. Food flew everywhere. Warren pushed himself back up and finally fought back. They wrestled throughout the house while Laura watched. That's when I noticed something strange about Laura's expression. She was smiling. It was like she was watching a boxing match on TV. Worse, it was like she had planned this all along. While she was distracted by the fight, I grabbed her phone. It had fallen onto the floor when the table had flipped over. I remembered her password. She was one of those idiots who use 12345. I wasn't sure what I was looking for, but when I opened her recent texts, I got everything I needed to know. She and Warren had been texting back and forth for months. As I scanned through the explicit messages and pics, I knew they'd been having an affair. I felt like throwing up. Then I saw the final messages. They'd agreed to come clean at dinner tonight. That was the whole reason for this group Valentine's dinner. But then Warren had sent another message, just before they'd arrived, saying that he chickened out. He couldn't leave me, and if she said anything, he'd deny it. Her reply was, "You'll be sorry." So this fight was all part of her twisted revenge plot. By now, Warren was getting the upper hand. He had dragged Daniel out onto our balcony, where he was crouched over him, pummeling him in the face. Poor Daniel didn't deserve that. I ran out to the balcony to pull Warren off. He wouldn't. He's normally a gentleman, but if someone challenged him to a fight, he would never back down. Laura knew that would happen. As I grabbed Warren's shoulders, he pulled his arm back to punch Daniel again. I was in the way, and he accidentally elbowed me in the stomach. I stumbled backwards and almost fell off the railing. My near fall finally got the two men to stop fighting. They stood up. Through the sliding door, Laura was watching everything unfold. Her face looked disappointed. She wanted the fight to continue. Worse, she wanted Warren to shove her husband to his death. I could see it in her eyes. That was her real plan. That's why she left the balcony door open and encouraged them to take it outside. Both men were bleeding and gasping for breath. I looked them both directly in the face and said, "Daniel, Warren isn't abusive. Laura made that up to get you to fight him. They're sleeping together."
"How'd you know?"
Warren gasped. I thought the fight was over. We'd walk back inside and have an adult conversation. I would leave Warren. I had to. And Daniel would probably do the same to Laura. It seemed like she had gotten what she wanted. The truth was exposed. But then Daniel did something none of us expected. He grabbed my husband by the shoulders and shoved him off the balcony. Warren died on impact. When the police came, I lied. I said that Warren had fallen by accident during the fight. Laura was too busy sobbing to argue. So that was my last Valentine's Day as a married woman. It was not what I'd expected.
A domestic violence survivor, Rachel Williams finally had the courage to leave her abusive marriage after 18 years of domestic abuse. She also talks about the most horrible day of her life. That is Valentine's Day, where she was expected to cook and make love with her monstrous husband, Darren Williams. Rachel, too, would get a box of chocolates, flowers, and cards. But ultimately, they had no meaning to it. Things took a huge turn in July 2011 when he tried to strangle her and slit wrists in front of his 16-year-old son. She left and complained to the police to get him arrested. But he shot her after getting bailed at her salon, where she worked as a hairdresser. He shot her leg and also gave her punches, after which she was admitted in hospital for 6 weeks.
My name is Michael, and I work at a 24-hour pharmacy. I had some pretty wild experiences with customers, especially during the height of the pandemic when the crazies would come in and ask about horse tranquilizers and stuff. But out of all the crazy customers I had, nothing will ever top what happened to me last week. I was working the night shift, which is always pretty quiet. In 3 hours, I think I had 5 customers, maybe 6. We had security cameras everywhere, and my boss had a really strict policy about not using cell phones or reading books on the job. So, even though I was bored out of my mind, I couldn't do anything besides just stand there and wait for people to come. Then midnight rolled around. That was the halfway point of my shift. The front door opened, and the man walked in. He was tall and extremely skinny. He was missing a lot of his teeth, and his skin was really wrinkled and leathery. I could tell he was on some kind of substance. With customers like that, I have to be very careful that they didn't try to steal anything from the shelves. I kept an extra close watch on this guy as he wandered around all the aisles and slowly made his way back to my counter.
"Where's all the cough syrup?"
he asked. I pointed to the cough syrup behind the glass case. Because drug addicts used cough syrup to make meth, we had to change our policies. It was still over the counter, but we had to limit how much we could sell to an individual customer. "Right here," I said. "Would you like to buy a bottle?"
"I need all of them,"
he said. "I'm sorry, sir, but that's against our policy. Just one per customer." For a second, he stared at me as if I just murdered his pets. Then his face went blank and he said, "See you around." And then he left. I had a really bad feeling about that man. Usually, when addicts like that don't get what they want, they'll start screaming profanities at me. They'll say the worst things, but eventually they'll leave. But this guy acted weirdly calm as he left. I knew in my heart that he was going to come back. About an hour passed, and no other customers came in. Then the man came back. But this time, he wasn't wearing the same dirty brown suit as before. He had a giant cap, an eye patch, boots, black t-shirt and jeans, and a plastic hook. I couldn't believe it. He came back in a pirate costume. I had to hold my hand over my mouth so that he wouldn't see me laughing.
"Hello, matey," he said. "I need cough syrup for me and my crew."
"I'm sorry, sir," I said. "Like I told you last time, I can only sell one per customer. It's our policy."
Last time? I've never been here before, matey."
What was he thinking? How did he even get a pirate costume? It was honestly the most surreal moment of my life. I started laughing at the ridiculousness of it, but then he pulled out a long, thin sword and started waving it at me. And unlike his plastic hook, the sword was very real. Before I could do anything, he jumped over the counter and started swiping the sword toward my face. There wasn't a lot of room behind the counter. It was a small space with a bunch of shelves filled with medicine, and I didn't have anywhere to go. I just had to dodge him.
"Argh!"
he shouted as he slashed the sword at me. The tip of his blade cut into my shirt, and I had to twist to the side. I fell against one of the shelves and tripped. As I stumbled to the ground, he lowered the sword to my neck.
"Get up!"
he demanded. I did what he asked. He kept digging the tip of the sword into my throat, and he told me to jump onto the counter. "Why?" I asked.
"Because I'm gonna make you walk the plank,"
he said.
"And when you do, I'll steal my booty."
Now, I know this sounds funny, but it was honestly terrifying. I mean, a real sword was pointed at my neck. If I did even one thing wrong, he would kill me. I had to play into this pirate fantasy. As he led me back toward the counter, I reached over toward the phone hidden next to my work computer. I pushed off the receiver and dialed 911. I knew he was staring at my face, so I made sure not to look down at the phone as I did it. Then I climbed onto the counter, and he stepped back. He still held up the sword, but now it was thankfully not poking into my throat. "Tell me again what I have to do," I said.
"Walk the plank!" he screamed.
"But we're not on a pirate ship," I said. "We are in Murphy's Pharmacy on Maple Street." He was insane, so I knew I shouldn't argue with his delusions, but I wanted to make sure I said the address so that the 911 dispatchers could hear me. The man stared at me until I started walking across the top of the counter. It was only about 4 feet off the ground. If I jumped off it like he wanted, I probably wouldn't hurt myself, so I started walking. When I got to the edge of the counter, I stopped.
"Keep going!"
the man screamed.
"You have to jump head first!"
But how could I jump head first from a counter that was only 4 feet off the ground? I didn't think it was physically possible, and if I did try to jump head first, I'd probably hurt myself. I had a feeling that the cops had heard the 911 call, so I decided to stall. "Can I say my last words now?" I asked.
"Fine," he said. "But make it quick, matey."
I did not make it quick. I basically started to say my entire life story. I don't even remember what I said exactly, but I just kept talking and talking. I could see that the man in the pirate costume was getting more and more frustrated. Eventually, he screamed that time was up and I had to jump. And that was when the police came. Perfect timing. Two officers rushed in. One of them grabbed the man, pulled the sword out of his hands, and cuffed him. The second one came up to me and asked what was going on. "Honestly," I said, "I have no idea. All this guy wanted was cough syrup." They took him away and arrested him for... honestly, I have no idea what crimes he committed. Thankfully, I never saw him. I've had a bunch of other strange encounters with customers since then, but nothing will ever be as strange as the guy who dressed up like a pirate.